Anya.
Cannot be serious!
Now, Don, since we started doing this podcast a couple of years ago, we have always mentioned that the world revolves around corruption in every level of society and the community, sport, politics, religion, everywhere. And I would like to say we have been ahead of the curve with this because about 18 months ago, maybe a year ago, our friend Bill Ferg from the Lobster Cove alerted us to the fact that there was something going on, something nefarious going on in a private enterprise business which was trying to be nobbled by a government enterprise. We reached out to the people who are sitting opposite us at that time, and they said, well, they're very happy to speak about it, but there was some court action and they'd like to not jeopardise that. Hence the fact that we didn't speak with them at the time. The reason they're sitting in front of us at the minute is because this has been going on, and it has been going on, and I've got a feeling the governments involved, the federal, state and local governments involved, are trying to tough this out. But I'm not putting words in these people's mouths, so I'll introduce in 1 second. But I reckon we're on the horns of one of the greatest corruption cases in Australian history. If you just listen to what we're about to speak about, and I know these people have spoken, or the gentleman I'm about to introduce in a minute has spoken to our friend Andrew Rule and done a podcast with him. It's been in the newspapers, and I'm suggesting the more people that can interview the man I'm about to introduce, the more people who can interview him about this case, the better, because this is the most extraordinary thing I've ever heard. If you're talking about a socialist government trying to corrupt and put out of business a private enterprise person who is not only put him out of business, but put the people who work for him out of business. It is a rot. It is a disgrace. Now, these are my words. They might say I've gone in a bit heavy, but I know I've listened to all this, and this is an absolute disgrace. The person I'm going to introduce is a man called Ian Cook. He is the managing director or owner of a place called I Cook Foods, and they won a contract to provide, I'll ask him about how all this started. The bottom line of this, Don, is the premise is that they were tried to be nobbled by a government enterprise, by a person masquerading as, or probably might have been, a bona fide health inspector, placing a slug on the floor of their business, which immediately made it look as though it was unhygienic and rendered them defunct from being in the food industry, only to be taken over by a government enterprise. That is the crux of the story. If I've got that wrong, Ian Cook, who I'm about to introduce now, will tell us. And welcome, Ian, to it. You've brought along with you. Tell me who you've brought along with you. Such is the veracity and seriousness of this. You've got two ex-police officers who are doing this pro bono for you because they have read all this and they have decided that this is a disgrace. Have I got any of that wrong? Welcome, Ian Cook.
No, thank you very much. And no, you haven't got any of that wrong. If anything, you probably could go heavier. But I'd like to introduce you to Detective Sergeant Paul Brady and Detective Inspector Rod Porter, both retired. These gentlemen I was introduced to over a year ago. Part of the reason that we couldn't speak to you at the time, Sam, was that it wasn't so much legal action that I was taking, which has now started. The problem was, in part of the cover-up, they actually charged me with 48 breaches of the Food Act, and they charged my company with 48 mirror breaches of the Food Act. So 96 charges. Within those 96 charges, there was like 323 allegations, which technically are other charges. that was finally, we finally got a contest mention in Dandenong Magistrates Court. At that contest mention, because we were subpoenaing all of the edited and evidence that they had mucked around with, they withdrew every charge.
So Ian, just in case people are not quite as conversant as I am and we are with this, you had a company which had contractual arrangements to supply food, free enterprise, you're a free enterprise person to provide, and the government wanted to step in and put their own company in to get you out of the way, and they dishonestly and corruptly and maliciously planted a slug in your premises, which was photographed. The photograph was doctored as evidence.
Correct.
And this has been going on now, and they just hope that they'd tough it out. This is David and Goliath. They thought you would go away, but you're not going away. And I'm just suggesting, I think I suggested this before, you will end up receiving one of the biggest payouts for compensation in Australian legal history, I believe, if what you say and these two gentlemen who are ex-police are going to back you up. This is probably the greatest disgrace I've ever heard, ever, this what they're doing to you.
That's completely right.
So paint the picture for people who mightn't be quite aware of what we're talking about.
Okay, so iCook Foods was the largest private provider of delivered meals in Victoria. So in Victoria, it starts back 2009. In 2009, Dandenong Council, along with a number of other councils, get funding from the Minister for Infrastructure, which at that time was Anthony Albanese. He gives them $9 million. They get $6 million from the state, from the health department here in Victoria through the state government, and that starts it. So they start, and they are now competing against myself, companies like ISS, etc. They actually wipe the market out. They damage the market there and then. We struggled on. ISS lost 80 jobs and went out of the business completely. We persevered, and we persevered to the point that by 2015, between 2015 and 2018, we took $3.8 million worth of contracts the community chef thought they were going to win. So that's the government-run one, community chef.
Yep, community chef, yep.
Now, how do we know that? It's because we have not all, but most of their board papers. So we know what was happening inside community chef during this period of time. And they were desperate to get funding. They lost money every year that they operated, and they were desperate to become integral and to become the last one standing in this market. That would have made them that would have meant that they had to be funded. So the best thing to do is get rid of your competition.
Were they in partnership with an individual, a private individual, or was it solely a government?
It was completely run by local councils. And so our council that regulates us is Dandenong City Council. The CEO of Dandenong City Council is John Benny. John Benny sits as a board member on Community Chef.
Yeah. So the conflict of interest is palpable.
Oh, absolutely.
That is a word.
Not only that, we know from board papers, on the morning we were closed, he shot straight into the Community Chef board meeting. That's on the 22nd of February 2019. And he tells the other board members
what's going on.
That's before we're named, before anybody knows anything about us.
So, Ian, you've brought two gentlemen in with you. I want you to just introduce them and tell us why they're here. I know why they're here, but tell us why they're here, because I don't think you'd get two retired police officers, men, we'll call them, people.
Yep.
Gender neutral we are, retired police officers to take this case on if they weren't absolutely convinced that this is the greatest rort probably in legal rort snobble a business.
So first I'll start with Detective Inspector Rod Porter, retired. I was advised by a friend of mine who is in the profession who said, you can spend all sorts of money on legals. What you really need is a couple of retired detectives. You'll find they think differently and they will help you with... We had a whole lot of evidence, and they'll help you collate it and get it into a format where it's useful and that you can proceed, you know, to fight the fight, so to speak. Anyway, I was introduced to Rod Porter, and I remember when I first rang Rod, Rod said, look, come up to my place, we'll sit down, we'll have a cup of tea, you can tell me your story. If I don't believe you, or if I think, you know, you're a part of the problem, I'll let you know forthwith. And I remember sitting there thinking the way he speaks and everything else, and I really wouldn't like to be a crim with him interrogating me. So that was it. I spent 4.5 hours telling Rod my story, and that was in the early days. That was before some of the extra evidence that we have. Rod, shortly after that, introduced me then to Detective Sergeant Paul Brady. And Paul Brady and Rod, they're like guardian angels. They have come in. Paul has worked 7 days a week for months with us to make sure we put together a brief of evidence to show what happened to us.
Firstly, Rod, you probably thought I'll retire and just go and play golf or do a bit of gardening. Why have you taken this so seriously, and why are you up and about with all this, Rod, please?
Okay, well, as Ian has reiterated, I spoke with Ian for about 4 hours, where he detailed to me the corrupt actions of various individuals and government entities, including the city of Greater Dandenong and the health department. And these departments and individuals are entrusted with statutory powers that they've just straight out abused. They've deliberately behaved criminally, and in doing so, they've shown a total disregard for the law.
So these are pretty serious statements. They've behaved criminally. If this goes to the logical extension, this is people are looking at jail time here, are they?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I hear what Ian says. You're a retired detective sergeant?
Inspector.
Retired detective inspector.
I was looking at Paul's CV, I beg your pardon. Detective inspector. You wouldn't say these things lightly. So the veracity of this is just extraordinary, that a person, and we can mention her name because a person called Liz Garlick was a so-called health inspector, I presume.
Yep.
She came in and deliberately, we can say this, can't we? Deliberately placed a slug on the floor of your premises to give the impression that you were unhygienic and with the view to having you be closed down. Who you were incidentally closed down in the end, how irony bites you on the ass. You were eventually closed down by Brett Sutton, who we've all heard of in the COVID part. Part of the Daniel Andrews was the then health minister. Brett Sutton closed you down. Anthony Albanese was part of this in the federal government. This is a government conspiracy to drive a free enterprise privateer out of business and have the government take over your contractual arrangement.
Yeah, I might.
How am I going?
You're doing very well. I've got to say this. In my 26 years as a police officer, I've never seen anything so disgustingly corrupt and evil as what has been happening here, and the people involved in bringing this innocent family and his business down have absolutely no morals and no soul.
So, Rod, and first of all, we'll ask you Paul. Why are you of the same opinion? And it seems extraordinary that two people who are retired police officers, police in the police force, would be so single-mindedly obsessed with making sure justice is done. Would that be fair to say?
Well, the situation is, Sam, that after Rod spoke to me about it, and I eventually got involved. It didn't take me long to realise that this is an extremely serious matter, and it's probably one of the worst corruption cases. Well, it is the worst corruption case that I've had anything to do with, considering that these are paid public officials entrusted by the public, to behave in such an evil, disgraceful and reprehensible manner. Bear in mind, these health inspectors are actually investigating officials under the Crimes Act, so they have the same obligations as police officers. So that's a very important point to consider here.
Why wouldn't the, you gentlemen are retired, why wouldn't the police force investigate or do the job that you people are doing now?
It's a good question, Don.
What I'd say about that is that I made a complaint to Dandenong Police Station. I made the complaint and there were three detectives there at the time. There was a guy called Mark Hawker, then Detective Ash Penry and Detective Rick Mokos. Detective Ash Penry and Rick Mokos spent hours down at our premises looking at videotapes, looking at all the evidence, discussing all the evidence with Paul Brady. They told Paul Brady, I'm sure Paul will back me up on this, that they expected to lay charges. They could see the criminal. One of them sat there and said when he saw the video he was finding things that we hadn't even noticed, like garlic pudding endangering the lives of my employees by increasing chlorine amounts that we were supposed to use to wash floors.
No, and... hang on. No, the police were removed off the case, were they
so
not?
So what happened then was Ash Penry says he's going to take action against a number of people, senior people, the whole lot, and then all of a sudden he's on forced leave. Shortly after that, Paul contacted him. He told Paul that it had been taken off him, the brief, and that the brief was going to be sent to a guy called, a guy at Moorabbin.
Andrew Kerr.
Andrew Kerr. And so it went down to Kerr. Kerr had it. Kerr then spoke to Mr. Brady and he said, I'm going to send this back to Dandenong. They've just got to get on with it. Words to that effect. Paul will correct me if I'm wrong. So then he's on forced leave. Now it goes from him being on forced leave, it then ends up with KCCIU and we get a new guy, which is Detective Inspector Lewis. He goes through with me and everyone and Paul and says, yes, there's crimes here. Yes, this needs to be taken further. He puts it up for approval so he can take it further, i.e. charge people and do that. And then all of a sudden, he comes in with his boss and says, nothing to see here. We dropped it. Now, the one point I would make about that is once might be a mistake. Three times starts to sound like or smell like a cover-up. They have been politically interfered with to stop it. Ask these two guys whether what I just described to you is normal police practice.
Well, we ask them.
No, it's certainly not police practice. I mean, this behaviour...
Police aren't corrupt, are they?
Well, some can be.
So this is a little bit of that in this as well?
Well, you've got to ask... I think three questions. Has there been political interference? Is there some form of other corruption involved? Or are they just plain incompetent? And they're questions that we will get the answers to. We won't let this go.
So, Paul, you would... Either the police or... they've been intimidated or threatened by higher powers, higher government powers, would you suggest, or they're just not wanting to get involved for their own career's sake?
If I can put it to you this way, the two gentlemen that investigated it initially was Detective Sergeant Penry and Detective Sergeant Chris Lewis. Now, I retired as a detective sergeant, so I know what the procedure is. It's as simple as this, Sam. The detective sergeant reads a brief. First of all, he establishes whether an offence has been actually committed. Then, is there enough evidence to support those allegations? If there's not, the brief is non-authorised. If there is, the brief goes up to the next rank, which is a senior sergeant who has the authority to authorise that brief. Now, the situation is, in my own experience, I've never ever had a problem like this or anything that parallels to what we're seeing here. And I've dealt with a lot of serious matters where I recommended prosecution. It went to the senior sergeant. It was then authorised, and then it was off to the OPP. I've never heard of the nonsense that we're being fed that, for example, it had to go to the regional committee, it had to go this, and they had to make all these decisions, and they were fluffing around with it and prevaricating and making all these nonsense excuses. And it was quite evident that they were out to kill the brief from go to woe.
So from either your investigation, Rod, or Ian, or you, Paul, who put the original person up to put Liz Garlick, who put her up to deposit illegally and maliciously a slug in your premises? Who do you think did that, or do you know who did that? The Dandenong Council must have got either through advice from the state government or the state-run people?
Department of Health and Human Services. Yep. So you have the Food Act. The Food Act is regulated and enforced in Victoria by local councils. So, in effect, your local health inspector is the policeman or woman of the Food Act. Who put Garlick up to it? So either Garlick has... I cannot imagine that Elizabeth Garlick thought, I'll just do this for the hell of it. Now, I don't have a document that says who told her to do it, but I can say this, that Elizabeth Garlick now needs to really protect herself. She needs to come out and say, now, who made her do this, right? It's either that, or she has to take the full responsibility for these criminal activities. It's not just the slug, okay? So the slug is... it stands out as an extraordinary thing to do. Because remember, it's one of the charges. I was charged with having a pest in my premises.
You were closed down because of it.
Exactly. It was the...
Brett Sutton.
Yes, that's right. Now, Sutton says he didn't know about it, which I believe is just extraordinary, that he runs an investigation, and this is one of the big points in the investigation and in her documentation, is that she's found this pest in my premises. As I said, I cannot see that she did this on her own. I can see that this woman needs to come out and say why or who. I don't think she will, but I think that's what needs to happen.
So those people that are unfamiliar with the case, it all started, we go back to, it started, is it listeria or is that the... Listeria is what, food, a type of food poisoning or contamination?
So listeria is a form, listeria is a bacteria. And there are quite a number of strains of Listeria. There is one strain called Listeria monocytogenes. Most people call it Listeria mono. And as a food, if you get food poisoning from Listeria mono, most people will just expel it through their system. If, on the other hand, you are in a risk group, so if you're elderly or very young, then there is a risk that it can cause more health issues. And in I think it's about 20 or 30% of cases, it can actually cause mortality, so it can cause death.
So what happened is that you provided food to a hospital or an aged care facility, and one of the patients died, and they diagnosed it as dying from listeria. Is that right?
That's what Brett Sutton told everybody. Now, what we have to be crystal clear right now about is the woman that got the listeria, that they pinned on us, she did not die of listeriosis, which is the disease you get. The department knew this right in the beginning, but it was just very convenient that they could link listeria to our business to shut us down.
Okay, now, the other thing there as a layman, slugs.
Yep.
This was found in your premise.
Correct.
Now, to me, slugs... are in the garden,
yep.
And you don't see them ever in my lifetime. I've never seen a slug indoors. Secondly, I'll ask you, do you wash your floors?
Yes.
How could a slug, and where could a slug come from to go into a premise? And wouldn't that slug be killed by the chemicals that are washed the floor with? And secondly, and the third thing, wouldn't there be... they're similar to snails, and they leave a trail across concrete, a silver trail. couldn't you trace, or did they trace, where the slug came from, if it was found in your premise?
Okay, so where the slug is planted and the photos that are taken of the slug, there is no silver trail, nothing. Okay, there is no, there absolutely, you can clearly see, there's no reflection, no nothing. Now, you made an exceptionally good point about washing the floors down. I can show CCTV footage every single afternoon. Our premises, the boys would finish the day's cooking. The whole of the kitchen area would then be washed down and squeegeed back to drains. And it was done with a product called Claudette, which has a chlorine in it, and another sanitizer, which has a disinfectant, a lemon-scented disinfectant in it. One of the first things that the third detective that was looking at this case said is, listen, guys, I want you to do me an experiment. I want you to get a piece of plastic or something that has no chemicals, nothing on it. I want you to get a slug and put it on it. I want you to wash your floor like you normally do, leave it overnight to dry, and then I want you to put the slug on a disc that has no chemical on it and see what happens. We did. We actually have that filmed. The slug tries to go off the plastic disc onto the floor. It gets about, it was the same size as the slug that was planted. It gets about half its body length onto the floor, and then it double backs on itself and gets back onto the plastic disc. No. It goes around the plastic disc, tries to get off again, and it won't. No. Keeps going back.
So, Rod, your inquiries show that would... What? Your inquiries surely would have shown, your investigation, that this slug came out of this Liz Garlick's pocket in a tissue. It was put there, it was planted there. The photo was doctored after the photo was taken with the tissue there. They removed the tissue to show that it didn't come out of a tissue and out of Liz Garlick's pocket. Where is this headed? This is just the most... I've never met Ian before, I've never met any of you. This is the most annoying thing I've ever actually been part of. This is just a disgrace. Where is it headed, mate?
Well, it's going to get to court. We're determined to get it to before the courts and get Ian the justice that he so richly deserves. I mean, it's the only way to describe all this is just pure evil.
You got a $30 million business, I presume. I don't know how much business that was, a figure that was given.
Okay. Yeah, at the
maybe it was valued at that. You've lost 45 people have lost their jobs over correct. It. This is Big Brother, a socialist-run government trying to put out of business a private enterprise member of the community. It is staggering, mate. And I tell you. Has any of these government agencies, Paul, refuted this, or have they ever said, no, you got the wrong handle on this, this didn't happen? Have they ever tried to justify what's happening here?
No, that's a good question, because that's one of the things that Ian and I and Rod and myself have discussed quite regularly, is that, you know, we have made allegations of criminal conduct of the highest order.
Again, who committed the crimes?
Oh, well, actually, we're looking at not only the health inspectors, we're looking at the council and Department of Health and Human Services. And
you put these serious... No one has ever refuted them.
No, this has come up discussion all the time. I mean, Ian has made all these allegations which go to the heart of the system. They're the most serious criminal offences in the statutes, yet not once has any government official, councillor, or anyone come back and refuted them, questioned them, come out swinging and saying, how dare you talk about my staff like that?
Yep.
Nothing, not a word.
Ian, how much is this costing you? What are you hoping to get?
Okay, so there was a due diligence done on our business literally just prior to this occurring. Sutton shuts me on the Friday. On the Monday, we had two investors who were coming in because they liked some of the IP and technology that we had, which is quite unique. They were coming in with a cheque for $2.5 million for 10% of the business. So that valued our business at $25 million on that day. It has cost me, we've been able to stay on our feet because we ran a business that was cash positive and we weren't into high levels of debt. So... we've been able to survive, but it's cost me over $1 million just to today, And I had been told, and in fact I was told by Stefan, who is the chief of staff of Gabriel Williams, who is the local member, that, Ian, they just want to send you broke.
Yeah, broke, okay. What are you hoping to get out of it, monetary-wise?
Well, I want the value of the business plus some exemplary damages.
Yeah, and what are you gentlemen, what's in it for you two gentlemen?
Well, we're not asking for anything. We just want to see justice, as corny as that may sound. That would satisfy us.
You want loss of reputation. Look, everything that goes with compensation. Was there not a whistleblower that... I did have someone's name. I just can't find it in my notes. There was a whistleblower that came out and said, you have been rorted, you have been... This is... they actually confirmed what you're saying and they were independent of you.
Yes. That was a woman named Kim Rogerson. So she was a previous environmental health officer who did the zone that we're within. So she had inspected our premises. They've tried to turn her into the scapegoat. They've tried to say that she didn't do her job properly. But the main thing, and I'll hand you over to Paul in a sec, is that I was told to contact her by a person who previously worked at Dandenong when this all went down. And he rang me and he said, you need to speak to your previous EHO. And I said, his name was Jeff. I said, well, why is that, Jeff? He said, look, I don't want to go into it on the phone. Please talk to her. So I didn't have a number. I had to go and find a number for her. So I managed to get a hold of her. And literally on the phone, this woman's telling me that they were setting me up. Setting me up. That they were changing the statements that were going to be used in the court case. So they tried to get her to change her statement to show that we'd been warned and that we were doing the wrong things, etc., etc. She wouldn't do it, and it caused her enormous stress, and they bullied her about it, and she just said, right, that's it, and she went off on sick leave. Paul went and took a statement from her, and he can tell you, you know, Paul, as a professional detective in his working life, sat down and interviewed her. And just like Rod, I'm sure, if he thought she was not on the level, he would have let me know.
So who's the culprit here? Is it the state government, federal, state, or local? Federal, state, or local government? Who is the culprit? Who are you after?
I think the two main culprits are the state, so the Department of Health and Human Services.
That's Brett Sutton's group.
And the city of Greater Dandenong, headed by... John Benny and his two health officials, which is Leanne Johnson and Elizabeth Garlick.
So just moving on, I don't know if you ever watched a show called McMillions about how they rorted the McDonald's, what?
The Monopoly.
The Monopoly game when they rorted. Well, my point is, why hasn't or has an investigative company like Netflix or HBO or free-to-air like 60 Minutes, this is, you can't get a more public interest story than this about how the small man is trying to be nobbled by Big Brother, the government. There is a series in this, mate. If Paul and Rod will put their reputations on the line, and you will go this far without being intimidated to drop it. It is extraordinary that this keeps going. At some stage, Rod, at some stage, this must come to a logical conclusion where the government, whether they admit it or not, throw their hands in there and say, we're done, we're stuffed, we are guilty, and we're going to pay you adequately for all the stress and duress you've been put through. Is that too extravagant to say that, mate?
That is spot on. All we've ever asked for is honesty and transparency. We've gotten neither. And what these people have got to understand is it's not going away. We're not going to let it go away. We're going to continue with this till the very end. And what is ironic is as each day goes by, we find more evidence involving more individuals, involving more corruption.
What, in other areas?
In this area.
Or in just in this area?
More and more as it goes on. So it's getting worse for them, I must say.
What do you gentlemen think of the state government? This is just one small story. Last year we had the coronavirus investigation. Daniel Andrews and everybody got up because they introduced industrial manslaughter. Andrew's brought in industrial manslaughter earlier on in the year, and had the ministers got up and, you know, they didn't know what happened with regard to the deaths in old people's home, because they are then liable for industrial manslaughter.
Yes.
Do you think much of this is going on in the Victorian government at the moment in other facets? We've got the catering, we've got the health issue. Do you think there's other areas?
Well, if they're capable of this, they're capable of anything.
I think this is not a very good example of honesty and integrity, that's for sure.
Well, how can it possibly? I know Andrew Rule, he's a very competent man. I listened to his podcast about it, and we've introduced Paul and Rod to this, two ex-policemen. Honestly, how can it keep going? At some stage, it must come to its logical conclusion. If ever there was a GoFundMe program that's up and running for the public to just say, no, this is ridiculous, no matter who's involved, how do you fund all this? And have you ever tried to get some support from the public for this?
No, I hadn't. I guess, we're 2 years down the track now. I lost a year because they charged me. The lawyers told me, you can't do anything, Ian, until you get off the charges. Now, you were talking about minimum 96 charges, and they...
Dropped them all. That's just...
And by the way, on the day they did it, we were at Dandenong Magistrates Court for over 5 hours. I had a barrister and solicitor there. There were three of them. They had a barrister, they had the head of health from Dandenong, and they had the prosecuting lawyer there. First they said, okay, well, we're going to drop all except the first four charges, and we're going to change a couple of the other charges into infringement notices. And I said, no, you're not. I said, you charge me? I can't stop you withdrawing charges. But you're not changing anything into infringement notices. We'll go in and see the magistrate. So this goes on, and then they discuss it with my people for another few hours. And the next minute we're supposed to be walking into court for a contest mention and subpoenas, and I get pulled aside and say, okay, well, they're dropping all the charges.
Who pulled you aside?
My lawyer pulls me aside and says, they're going to drop all the charges. And he said, there is one condition, and that's they want you to sign a non-disparagement clause. And I said, what, I can't tell my story? I can't tell people what happened? And he said, well, basically. But he then says to me, because he's a very experienced criminal lawyer, he said, it's incredibly unusual, Ian, to have 96 charges pulled on the first day you turn up to have a mention in a court. And I said, never been in this position, but I don't care. I'm going to tell my story.
Yep.
And if they don't don't want to agree to that, I'll go in to the magistrate and we'll go through the 96 charges.
Rod, I'm staggered that a media organisation hasn't actually taken this by the throat and run with it. If there's not, as I say, you want to watch McMillions, I know that's on a global scale, but this is just why they haven't done an investigation on this. You could run a series on this, the corruption at every level of the country that we live in, this great country we think we're in, and we're putting up with this, and I'm not sure how long... I don't know how your health or your mental acuity is or whatever it's doing to all of, or not you two people, but not you two ex-police. I don't know how this can keep going without someone eventually taking responsibility and saying, yep, it's our fault and here's the money.
We are just disgusted, disappointed with the whole approach to this. And I think Ian's barrister put it very well, and when she said, this is now bigger than I Cook Foods. This is, in fact, an attack on our democracy, and it must be stopped. It just simply must be stopped.
Are you still in business, Ian?
No. We're open and we can produce. The contracts that we did have went into show cause. So they went from show cause to termination, because... The other thing too is Sutton kept us closed for a month, all right? And he kept us closed because that ensured the destruction of the business. Now, how do we know that we were kept maliciously closed? The set of reports about the listeria that showed that the food that they sampled from our premises, which is why he closed us, when those tests were finally done properly and they showed that all of that food was safe under the legislated limits of food standards, they hid that report for 2 weeks. That put me to show cause. The other evidence they supposedly used was genetic evidence. They said that that the woman's strain of Listeria was genetically matched to what they'd found in corned beef that we buy in. Okay, the thing about that was that document was hidden for a month, and that document showed that that DNA was in Queensland and Western Australia. I don't sell food to Queensland and Western Australia.
Is the other company still in operation, your opposition, the government?
Chef. So Community Chef took business off us when this went down. They picked up a number of contracts, which they still have. The Department of Health and Human Services has bought Community Chef.
The department has bought it, but it was government-owned beforehand.
Well, it was owned by council, so it was owned by local government.
And council. Now the councils have sold out and the state government now run it.
They run the lot, yep.
Under who? Brett Sutton or Health and...
It's been sold and effectively been given to Western Health. So Western...
That's out in Footscray.
That's correct.
Have you gentlemen got faith in the police department?
Not...
Yeah, you're ex-coppers.
Yep, no.
With
no,
what's I, going on, have you
after,
got faith?
After what's happened to Ian, no, I haven't. None at all, because, the senior sergeant who came down to Ian Cook's place to make the decision and say, sorry, nothing to see here, I just couldn't believe it. Now, let's get one thing clear here. I asked him, I said, well, did you arrest Garlick and Johnson, the two health inspectors who...
What grounds would you arrest them on?
Well, the police had reasonable grounds to arrest them.
For what?
Attempting to pervert the course of justice, perjury and misconduct in public office. Okay, so they're very, very serious matters. Now, my question to them was, why didn't you arrest them? They answered, we didn't have enough. Now, if I can just explain this. The grounds for arrest is reasonable grounds. To put a brief of evidence together and put it before the court is beyond reasonable doubt. So I believe that they've applied the highest possible burden of proof beyond reasonable doubt to arresting these two health inspectors when all they should have done was arrested them on reasonable grounds. Now, let's face it, they had a brief of evidence, 16 folders. A 16-folder brief of evidence prepared by the iCook food team. Now, if that's not reasonable grounds, I'll go he.
Might I add to that, it's direct evidence. It's not circumstantial evidence. It's evidence that's corroborated.
So just to show you two gentlemen's bona fides, you don't do this. This is not a moonlight. You don't do this for any other... you've just
never
purely
done
got
anything.
Involved in this. You don't do this.
No, I'll tell you why we did it. First thing Ian said to Rod and myself, he said, I need this help. How much, what's it going to cost me? The first thing we said without even thinking, absolutely nothing, Ian. This is wrong on every level. Absolutely wrong. Now, I said, if we can have a bureaucracy that can do this to you, no one is safe.
Yep.
No one.
So we can go on and on about this. If people haven't got the gist of what's going on, why any one of you, either three of you, why can't this go before the Supreme Court and be judged by a jury right now? Why can't you take this to court and have this, or doesn't it work like that?
Well, we have a civil action in place because of COVID and because of they're not having court cases, they're doing it via web, et cetera, et cetera. The Supreme Court is backlogged. So our civil Supreme Court action won't hit the courts until probably sometime in February next year, unless they defer it on... Yeah, so that's the answer to that court question. It does take a toll.
Toll in what way?
Just emotionally.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quality of
so
life.
So what you're suffering, consequently, you can't go on with the case? Is that what you're saying?
Sorry.
So no. You suffering, and that's why you can't continue?
Or? No. We will continue. We'll keep fighting. Yeah. I mean, it's like one lawyer said to me once, Ian, you know, you're upset about all of this. You know, maybe we need to think about it. So, hang on a sec. You know what? I might have days when I get really upset and you know, you're in tears or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not going away, right? This is wrong on so many levels, and if it means that I didn't set out to become some sort of martyr, but if that's what life has dropped on me, I promise you.
Ian, I can see it's affecting you emotionally. I can see that from here. Are they going to try and outspend you, mate? Are they just going to just keep going with this? And if that is their modus operandi, how can we? I don't know how we'd ask people to back. This, if ever you're going to back a cause, and as I say, I don't know from a bar of soap, but if ever the community going to back a cause, this is it. This is a government trying to nobble people who have done nothing wrong for their own ulterior motives. It is an absolute disgrace. I don't know how much further we can talk about this. Is there either of you, any of the three of you, like to say anything before we finish this?
There's a multiple of things. There's stories within stories. So you talked about, you know, if someone was interested in doing, and yep. I've had people say to me, this has got to go to Netflix or whatever.
Something.
Within all of this, they needed to keep us closed. So one of the requirements that they placed on us was we had to have an independent food safety auditor audit the business, right, in the first week we were closed. We complied with that to try and get ourselves open as quickly as possible. That auditor, guy named Gavin Bucket, I have another Supreme Court action against him because, and this is, once again, this proves how incredibly good advice it was to get a couple of police officers in. Paul Brady sat my wife down and said, Dina, I need you to go through every one of these FOI documents and you see anything related to auditors, give it to me. An hour and a half after reading, and she's a very good reader and very sharp-eyed young lady, she walks into Paul's office and we have a document inadvertently was given to us through FOI. And what does it say? This independent food auditor writes to the woman that audits him, so he keeps his registration.
Yep.
She's the one keeping us closed.
Yep.
And he says, dear Pauline and Leanne, that's Leanne Johnson, attached are my draft critical non-conformances for iCook Foods. Let me know what you want added and removed.
Rod, just finish. Just have a final. If you give us a closing statement, if you would, mate, because yes, this is annoying.
Just bloody shameful. And for God's sake, we need the Chief Commissioner to rattle the cage and get his people involved in this and do their sworn duty. Or else they can hang their head in shame.
So that's Rod Porter, retired detective inspector, and this is a final word from Paul Brady, detective sergeant retired. Come on, Paul, give us your final closing arguments, mate. This is just extraordinary.
My final would be that these rotten apples, these people that have behaved so corruptly and reprehensibly and totally against the public interest need to be brought to account, and we've got to make sure that something like this never ever happens again. Because the other thing that I really want to mention here, 45 jobs lost.
Yep.
And some of those people were disabled.
And oh yeah, that's
you know, and you know, that is just so disgraceful. And how a government can sit back and allow 45 people to lose their jobs, some of those disabled people who have never, ever been able to get work since, is just beyond me. It's just inhuman.
Ian, thank you. Ian, as I say, we could go on asking the Dorothy Dixers. the very fact that we can say all this about those government agencies and people and individuals and them not actually say boo about any of it means that they that their silence is deafening, and they know that they are implicated in this and they are complicit. It is just extraordinary. I don't know if you... I don't know how you're going to fund this, and I'm going to keep talking about money because in the end, that's what it's about. They'll try and outspend you, and finally.
Yeah, Rod? I came across this saying, and I think it's so apt in this situation. The truth doesn't mind being questioned, whereas a lie doesn't like being challenged. And that is such the case, so much the case here.
Well, you're a barrister or a solicitor when it goes to court, could open with that statement and just leave it there.
Exactly.
Ian Cook, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Sam.
And thank you to Rod.
Rod Porter.
Thank you very much. More names here. Paul Brady and Rod Porter, thank you very much, gentlemen. And I do admire the fact that you're doing this because you think a wrong has been committed and you're going to try and right it. And so thank you all for coming in. And I hope people like us and people in the press, Ian, keep interviewing you about this until the whole nation gets a gist of what's going on here. So thank you very much.
Thanks for giving us this platform.
Yes, thank you very much, Sam.